Welcome to The Firm, episode 4, and I am interviewing potential, hypothetical, could-have-been champion, Alec Joncombe. Yeah, back from vengeance.
Yeah, fresh back from vengeance.
Literally back.
Yeah,
right now.
Yeah, I got back about 10 minutes ago and I'm not feeling great. Feeling pretty knackered after, basically off the back of the three games I had today. I'm just dead to the world.
Hellish round from the final finish.
So, stay tuned and you'll hear about them.
Oh, yeah. If you're looking forward to me being tired, the cup, you're in for a treat. Yeah.
If you're looking forward to plenty of,
you won't believe the amount of editing that's going to go into this. Yeah. Right, I think I'll start this one with, like, in last episode, I remember asking you, okay, you get on the first table, sit down, what do you think? Move from that to, okay, you sat at your first table, across from the guy, what did you think?
Well, I think first of all, just scratch it back before we even get to vengeance.
Scratch.
Yeah, like, really? So before we even got to vengeance, the conversation that we had on the last episode has genuinely completely changed how I'm playing. Because you mentioned the fact that the way I play, well, played now, is that I played to not lose. I didn't play to win.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a load of nonsense, basically. When you said it, I did have a bit of a, oh my God, you're right. Then I sort of slept on it and I was just like, well, no, that's rubbish. You win by not losing. Then at the club and having a few games there and having, I had a warm-up game before Vengeance. I had it on the Friday night against Dave.
Yeah.
And playing all of those games, there was times where, like, my gut instinct was, oh, I'll move that there. And then I realised, no, I'm doing that to deny that takeout, or instead I should be taking the riskier play. Well, not even riskier sometimes, just the aggressive play.
Yeah.
Like, going, for example, Angel, who was my superstar of the weekend, she had one of the games in particular, she had a phenomenal game, right?
Literally game-winning model.
Yeah, literally game-winning model, that one game. But and in the rest, the other two games that I won, yeah, she was my superstar. But things like where I might have in the past gone, okay, Jack's on low health, I mean, oh, let's move him out the way so you don't get the kill on your next activation.
Yeah.
Instead of that, I'm just going, right, fuck that. Angel, she's going in, bouncing off someone, getting the tackle, she's super shot and goal.
Yeah.
And then just sort of sacrificing Jack, who, there was a couple of times that exact situation came up, who more often than not survived because he's got tough hide.
Yeah.
I don't know what my thing is, where I seem to think that models are made of glass. And that's completely flipped around in, like, all of my play, not just going into vengeance. Like, for example, on the Friday night, I played a game against Dave.
Yeah, for those of you listening, we're talking about Dave Millington, who's a good friend.
Local pundit.
We play against him often. Yeah, he's a Guild Ball enthusiast. He loves the fucking game.
Yeah, got kind of sort of guided us into it when we were sort of lost, sort of knowing we wanted to play. He sort of formed us into the actual players that we are.
I think we'll probably go into this in another episode, but Dave definitely falls into a player type, I call it. You might call him Master of the Jank, but I think he's very plan. He's a plan heavy player.
Mm.
Where Dave is great at picking out players that are hard to. He has sequences of events that are hard to block, and he's great at picking them out in game. So he's a tough. And if you do that well, it can be tough because they're part of those plans. I'm going to do this, and you don't get to reply.
Yeah, yeah.
And Dave is great at that. He's got like a bag of tricks that he can just layer out at any moment, and you're like, shit.
Yeah.
That feeling of, oh, fuck, I can't win.
Yeah, and he's very good at he's always been very good at giving me two bad decisions to choose between.
Yeah,
there's never a ooh, avoid that, because there's always a second sort of threat on the table. Not even 6 months ago, I wouldn't be surprised to go into a game against him and come out 12-2, 12-2, 12-4, and on the Friday night be 12-0.
I think you'll find 14.
Yeah, if you're gonna get technical, I did get a cheeky takeout as well. But yeah, so that's, I just wanted to bring that up to sort of show how much that one conversation we had, that one thing you said, has affected my entire view on the game.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, I still went into vengeance, won 3 games, lost 4. You know, I didn't magically become a god. But my previous record has always been, if you look at my history on Longshanks, I've won one round at every single tournament I've ever been to.
Yeah.
And I'm going to count BonesCon, a 3-day convention I went to. I won one game across 3 days. So to come out of that and win 3 games in a 7-round tournament, I really do feel like I've turned it around and I've gone from trash tier, like, bottom tables to, like, coming up fair to middling. And I think that even though there was 128 players, it did feel like a bit of a shark tank. Like, you were sort of looking around and going, wow, these people are all, like, absolute killers. So
When you messaged me during the time, you went, oh, here's who I've got next. I went, they're putting you in some fucking murderers here. You played two of a host of two of a podcast. I'm like, there are only like eight Gilball podcasts.
And one of the guys from TNG. Middling
players who don't give a shit about the game. Yeah. These are fucking straight up killers.
Yeah, on the first day, I felt like if I shook a stick, I would have hit a content creator.
Yeah. Are we all just listening to each other? We've got like a cottage industry. We should need to give a dollar to each of us Patreon. Yeah. Like, I think on that last conversation we had, when you said you played Dave and you did really well, and you managed to crush him, basically. Like, because I think we had our game where you crushed me, and like, I didn't view my beat back as legitimate. Because like, in tournament game, I wouldn't get repeat. When you crushed Dave, I have no, like, again, when we were playing and you got 12 hero, it wasn't like I wasn't trying to get points on the board.
Yeah.
And I know what kind of player Dave is. He's a great player, and there's no way he'd let you get away with 14 hero if he could help it. if he could have played a mega turnaround, like gone, okay, you've had your fun at 10 hero.
Yeah.
Now's the time for the real.
Yeah.
And you take your shirt off and you just start murdering people.
Yeah.
When you get a 14 hero, you go, oh, I just had a really good game. It's not just you had a really good game. Let the reality of it kind of fit on. If it's like you're playing against a guy who wants to win, he's killing a couple of hours of his time trying to play the goddamn game. You're at a tournament, you're getting prepared for a tournament, basically. And he's trying his absolute best just to get a point on a board with probably one of the most lethal teams in the game by far, and he couldn't do it. And I messaged you right after going, if you can 14 hero a guy like Dave, there is no reason you cannot clean that tournament. Like, that's not that kind of a win isn't the kind of thing you get accidentally. You know the game. And when you messaged me about it, I went, there you go, that's the attitude change in action. That was my first thought, like, going, this weekend belongs to you. And I said in the last episode, it doesn't matter if you'd lost every game at Vengeance. If you walked away from each game going, you know what, I played my best, I went in there with the right attitude, the other guy played, he came in well, he did his shit, beat me, no problem with taking the loss. But when you said you beat Dave like that, you'd already beaten me like that, and when you went into that tournament, I was going, yeah, you're in the right mindset to break out into the actual top 8 and kill some motherfuckers.
Yeah. It's, I don't think that ever could have happened.
Do not give me this shit, right? I honestly, again, don't be wrong, we've got the tournament table up right now, and don't get me wrong, there are all killers on this board. Good players, some better than others, obviously. But don't look at the entire board, go, I don't know. Look at each player individually, look at the locking, go, is there a scenario where you could have beat that guy? And if you walk away going, like, you know what, I felt like I could have played 100 games against that guy and I would have lost all 100, then maybe you can go away. But if you look at just one guy on his own and go, you know what, given enough, if I'd played another game, I think my chances might have gone from beating from 30% to 50. If we played another game, maybe 50 to 60. Like, you can, there's not anyone I see on the table who you can rule out not being able to beat. You look at the entire board and you go, oh, I was bound to take them off. But on an individual level, no reason you couldn't have.
Yeah, I had this really weird thing where I sort of, so I played that game on the Friday night and then went in on Saturday morning, and it was, I played completely different for the first sort of couple of turns in my first game, and I had this complete mental block. Like, I almost sort of regressed back to that sort of play to not lose mindset of, I don't know whether it was the fact that something went, oh, this is a tournament now, and suddenly these games kind of matter in a way that they don't really matter because it's a game.
Yeah.
But I don't know what happened, but I suddenly flicked it. You know, I'll be honest, it probably didn't help that... So my first round was against Jason Mountain from Singled Out. So a big part of me went... When the first game, a draw, went live on Longshanks and I looked at it, there was part of me that went, fuck, I'm fucked. And then this other voice just went, no, come on.
Yeah.
You know, only human and all that. And that whole thing that you said before, you know, there's not something magical about this, about anyone. Yeah. That no one can make an 8-inch model go 9 inches. You know, that you just can't, you know. Unless, you know, you've got some...
you've got the magic 1-inch, there's a magic half-inch.
Like, then I had that sort of micro pep talk in my head of, no, come on, this is a game. There are a set of rules that you both have to play to. There is no reason that there is anyone who is completely 100% of the time infallible. You know, part of that is down to the dice. So went into that game. So I lost 12-8. It was Vet Rage Union. I played my Corsair 6 throughout the entire tournament, all seven games. So that was Corsair, Tentacles, Jack and Kraken, Sakana and Angel.
Yeah.
I put them six down on the board. Jason looked at me like I was the stupidest motherfucker on this planet Earth, then picked his six. I don't know whether there was... I'd imagine there was some sort of counterpicking in there, but where you've said before on the podcast that people have looked at your models and sort of picked out ones that they know are sort of net listed to be better, yeah. I think that the sort of local events we go to, we haven't got any the big names playing yeah. Playing locally, like a huge amount of them. So when some people do that into you, it's at a huge disadvantage to them because they're not comfortable with it. But it was so obvious through that game that he was so comfortable with any model that just knowing my six going in, that might have affected the six he put on the table and was, you know, worked in his favour. And one of the first things he said to me was, have you got the, like, I'm not being funny, have you got the rest of the models? Oh yeah. Anyway, go back to the hotel, get them now, but like put them, don't, even if you have no intention of using them, have them in your tens so people look at them and have to try and count the pick. And I was like, why have I not even done that? Just because I was just going to play the six, there was no reason that I didn't have the other 10 light on the table with me. So should have done, but then all my games dragged on to the point that I couldn't. So then on the next day, on the Sunday, I did, and I think it actually made a huge difference. But yeah,
it's obvious to get, I disagree with that statement generally. Is that, for me, the mindset going in should be that you want the game to be as hard as possible for you. That's my mindset. Like when I say I don't care who sits across from me from the table, it's not just that, like, hey, your first game, we can get the guy who hosts a podcast and, more importantly, plays one of the strongest teams in the game right now. Vet Rage is popular because he's powerful. Not, I don't think that's a particularly controversial statement to say. They're a great fucking team.
It's like you said before, Vet Rage is a great team.
Vet Rage,
there's five other models there, but Vet Rage is a great team.
Vet Rage himself, yeah, is a great team. The thing about going in with the attitude of here are my six is that let them counterpick you, let that game be as hard as possible, let them take what they need to take to go in against you. If the bigger, again, I take it with the view of, if the best player in the world with the best team he's got, best mood he's playing in, sits across you and goes, and I'm going to pick the six models to counterpick your team, let him. Because if you're already getting to that mindset of like, oh shit, he's counterpicking me, I've got to think of the play, what's he going to do in response, what tech has he got, fuck him, fuck the tech, I'm here to play my game, I'll make him double think this, I'll make him regret playing that game. I want him walking away going, why did I bring fucking Hemlock? Eh? Why did I bring Snakeskin? I tried to counterpick the guy and this is what happened, and he won that game. But that mindset of like going, oh, you need to get into this Yu-Gi-Oh style pretense. It's like, if someone had maybe gone, it might bring Sakana, or, you know, it might bring a Siren or whatever. Like, I don't think the counterpicks from this game work as well as people think. There are a couple models who obviously do well, interact well with particular types of models, but generally, I don't agree with the counterpick style of playing. Because it encourages a lazy habit from bad attitude of, you, for me, that puts you in the mindset of, I'm not playing, the model could play.
Right.
And I'm just attending the game.
Mm.
Oh yeah, I put Gutter there, and Gutter does this instead of, here's my plan. I get this ball to the Angel, I get this ball to Kakana, ooh, this field's opened up. You get into the mindset of the model instead of the mindset of the game.
Yeah.
And when you get into that, like, the point is weird. You've only got a limited thinking. That's why when, even if you're playing in your, like, that whole thing of like going, I play to keep the other guy from getting more points than me, as opposed to me playing to win. The reason why that works is because you've got a limited amount of thinking time and thinking space.
Yeah.
And usually about a minute at a time, if you're timing it. But you literally don't have enough time to think about all the possibilities, and the possibilities of what you can do pay off for you a lot better when you can see your points on the board opposed to their point. And when you get into that counterpick style, you're not thinking about the points, or you're thinking about the models and play and the counter, and it takes up valuable thinking of it. I'm not saying there aren't models that you flat out counterpick or do great for a matchup, but for me, the attitude benefit you get from going, these are my things, counterpick motherfucker, is better than going, I'm going to play my Yu-Gi-Oh style trap card shit and make him think I'm going to bring whatever. Yeah. And I know why people go, oh, it's better to do it and pretend.
Yeah.
And go, oh, I'm always going to play that kick, but anyone could show up. Oh, is that salt? No, it for me, that puts you into, that takes up mental space that you're better off being you for, hearing my team. And I do not, and again, I've done it in tournaments myself, put my team down and go and pick your, I hope you pick the counterpick.
Run at me. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, every single player who's done that to me, who tried to counterpick me, or try and go, oh, that's what you've got, let me have a look at my card, they've lost every time they've done that to me. And I can see it on the face when they're doing it. Like, for that thing of, oh, bring your whole team just in case. That's like a mental barrier. And again, if you were the top into the top player, I'd go, yeah, yeah, any advantage you get. But for you, I think your growth as a player right now isn't to learn more cards or to learn more models, to break out of the loser's mindset in a way. And I think you're doing it. Like, again, for you to come in and go, "Ah, fuck, you crushed me on the Monday, you crushed Dave on the Friday, and you went into Vengeance going, I'm going to kill this motherfucker." And the thing that derailed you wasn't that you'd become magically working for player from the Friday to the card. The thing that betrayed you, you got put on the back foot. Who's my first game? Shit. Singled out podcast guy. He's playing one of the best teams in the game. He's a fucking killer. Oh, God. And like, I remember messaging you at the tournament going, a lot of people at Tom end up playing more defensively or conservatively. They go, I've got to try and keep everyone alive. I've got to deny everything I can. Instead of going, wait a minute, why aren't I pushing my victory point? The way you kill people on the game by getting... It seems obvious. You don't win the game by stopping them getting 12. You win by getting 12 first.
Yeah.
And the difference in attitude could not be any more different. And I think when you were messaging me, I could see the transformation almost in real time of you going, I am ready to win Vengeance. Were you going to? Probably not. But it don't matter. Like, it's not the point. It sounds like fucking Rocky 2, Rocky 3 bullshit going like, oh, it doesn't matter if you become world champ, Rock. Obviously, it matters if you became world champ. It'd be great. But it's not that for your growth as a player. In my mind, it wasn't about you coming home Vengeance, obviously. It was making you, putting you into the mindset where you could genuinely think, I'm going into the tournament and I could walk away with first place. Definitely top 8. I don't think that whole thing about going, oh, even though the tournament's over, I'm looking at these guys on the screen. I think given another mood, another time, another day, no one on that team you couldn't have picked. In my opinion, Vengeance top 8 is no problem. I think you said it yourself, you got pushed into a defensive mindset early on.
Yeah.
And when the second day came round and you were rolling on, when you got back into the winner's mindset, I think you were cutting more fucking.
So, like, this first game against Jason, he won 12-8. I had a really slow start to the game, and I think a lot of that was because of how I'd gotten into my head, and I sort of became this sort of... I'll tell you what, there's probably a podcast about to come out from Singled Out where it's like, yeah, and I played this fucking goon who was like, he couldn't remember that Corsair knocks down on 2, and like, he didn't know where to put his influence. Do you know what I mean? Like, I just had this complete sort of mental... Like, I got almost tunnel vision on just, oh my god, I'm going to lose this game before I even start. And then it was a couple of turns before I could get off the ground. You know, I got them two goals. Then the game ended with a goal from Mist. But I had a full stack on Sakana, a full stack on Corsair. Angel had Super Shot up and was in snapshot range. Like, stranger things have happened than that working, you know?
Yeah,
like, so
when you have that beautiful mind moment, if you look on the board and you see the VP popping up in your head, anyway. Sakana's got the, it's got old quote, what is it? Marble has statues waiting inside of it, waiting to be carved out. Like,
yeah
you look at Sakana, he's got 4 VP, Angel's got 4 VP, Corsair's got 2 VP in that takeout. The VP is there on the board waiting for you to snatch it and take it.
Yeah.
And yeah, when you've got a fully loaded Angel on the board at any point, at any time, yeah, not only is the goal possible, it's more fucking likely.
Yeah.
Yeah, so when you get, I hate that feeling of getting to a point in a game going, oh shit, I can win now, and then having it right denied to you. But that thing of being put on the back foot, another thing after the game, completely, it's like waking up from a bad dream where the second you wake up, you go, oh shit, yeah, I knew, I let it get to me. And we met each other over the course of the tournament. I was at home, I didn't get to go to Vengeance. And I really wish I had gone and coached now.
And fucking people were asking after you. I was basically going, Alex, oh god, I'm about to say this, I'm doing it, the Firm podcast, and like, there was a couple of people went, oh yeah, chat, oh yeah, listen to it, you know, people, whether they were genuinely enjoyed it or politely saying they enjoyed it, said they did, and most of them then went, oh, you're Alex. I went, yeah. And they go, oh, is the other one here? And I'd be like, no. And then they sort of seemed genuinely disappointed that they had me. Then the consolation.
I'll be the one wearing the crown next time. I think genuinely, what's the next tournament coming?
Next big one we're going to is Nats, Nationals.
Oh, well, shit, well, I'm not coaching that. I'm going to try and kill them.
Yeah.
I'm coming for everyone at Nationals. I plan on winning that. Mm. If I don't play, I'm going to be angry.
Just going to take that gold dice anyway.
I demand top 3.
It's just in your rider for turning up, top 3.
Yeah, that's by, as far as I'm concerned, first place belongs to me. And all the idiots turning up are getting in my way. The next tournament we do after that, I think I'll go in as your coach, and I think I'm just curious what it'll be like. I wonder if it'll make a difference.
We've got a fun little Falconers launch event at Leodis Games coming up. Yeah,
maybe if you can buy Falconers there, maybe you play Falconers. It's just not after national. Call casual from there.
So that was basically my first round. And the second one, I played into Blacksmiths against a chap. I think I played him at BonesCon. If I didn't, I certainly spoke to him at BonesCon. And fish into Blacksmiths, man. It's...
I fucking hate the Blacksmith matchup with any team at any point at any time. And for me, the crux of the issue is abundance of two armor. I know the whole thing at Blacksmith is like, oh, you know, the apprentices are really squishy, and the Lunar mascot to get the one of them supers. I think Blacksmith players overplay how squishy the apprentices actually are. And don't get me wrong, they have some shit apprenticing, but they have some fucking good ones too. Alloy, if he was a free player, I'd take him onto my team.
Yeah.
Like, he's a great striker. He's not a shit model by any means. The fact that Alloy fills in for a mascot, let that fucking detonate in your head for a minute. The fact that they've got guys like Bolt, who can jog and then sprint in the same activation. And how many strikers is that a problem for? The way you negate a striker is by trying to negate their first movement so they have to dodge for the rest, or making them dodge so they don't get as much movement. For a guy like Bolt, I get a movement, I do my attack, and I get the rest of my movement. Like, he just circumvents a huge amount of striker problems.
The big thing for me was things like Angel with the ball, with a full stack on her. I just need to get away. But being engaged by an Anvil who's in cover.
Yeah.
Okay, Angel, attack four, attack four. Okay, take one away. Oh, he's got three armor. No point rolling the dice.
Yeah.
I can't get her out. So I'd have to pass while being engaged. Yeah, that's an option. But then the ball goes over to somewhere. And then at that point, clock switches over. And some apprentice comes from downtown to either hit me in the face with the mallet into the ground with a momentum 7, or they come in and they come in and steal the ball and score a goal, or they come in, score a goal and hit me for momentum 7.
They have some great players, out of all the janky set play style teams, like again the plan heavy teams, they have almost pre-canned strategy. There are a lot of guilds you can look at and go, oh, I can play them in this way and that way. I can play a striking team or a beater team, or I can try and get like engineers, for a great example. They're kind of much more of a striker team than they are a beater, but you can jerry rig it, get tooled up, get pin vice in there, get some +2 damage. You can do a fair bit of damage with the engineer.
Yeah.
The blacksmith, when you bring the apprentice and the master, they come with almost like a pre-canned
It's almost like you just sort of go, who am I going to activate? Righto, okay, Anvil will go, and you sort of open up the sledge activation, you know, with doing that.
Yeah.
By activating Anvil, you turn sledge on, just turning him up to 11.
Yeah, and again, they have a lot of great players that circumvent a lot of the strategy for the other team. So, like, Angel's best thing, by far, is fixed defense. Like, when you get nimble up on her, like, in that situation with the Anvil, I'd be tempted just to try and take the ball and walk away.
Yeah, the best thing I had at that point was to nimble up, go to six defense, and just walk away. But then the counterattack, the parting blow, is +2 dice. You bonus timed it, +3. You're going to get the six in there somewhere. Anvil just bang, knocked down.
I think it's like, again, that mindset of going, if I can't do anything, I'll do what I can. I'm going to make it as hard as possible. Yeah. But then again, the sledge comes in, and you go, oh, I've got six defense. What's the sledge going to do here? I'm in cover. That negates the crowd out, right? Let's see what happens. Sledge comes in and goes, I get +3 net hit for free.
No hits. Oh, by the way, that's 3 hits.
Damage.
Yeah.
Hearth and Alloy, for example, or Cinder. You turn around with Cinder and go, oh, I want the hot shot attack. I only need 3 hits. But Hearth can give someone the ability to get +2 net hits. Guaranteed.
Yeah.
So it goes from, oh, I need 3 hits on this not great playbook to, wait a minute, 1 hit, 2 if I've got armor. And it may, like, take hot shot on my target, for example. I could consider doing the hot shot tackle on my target, but it's infinitely less likely than Cinder with guys like Hearth.
Yeah.
There's no way to buy my target more hits and vengeance tokens throughout the game, so that's not even a thing.
Yeah.
Whereas Hearth can go, yeah, that woman's got the great ability to take the ball and then kill it and get a 10-inch kick from where you're like. They have a lot of pre-canned strategy. They make hell for a lot of teams. And I do not envy you for an instant. When you said, I had Angel engaged by Anvil, like, that is the end of the activation. There is no response other than giving him a free attack or singled out. Like, it's not a fucking... And yeah, he's going to get the knockdown or the fuck you. Or worse yet, he can do a shitload of damage.
Yeah.
Not great.
So, my problem there was I switched it up too late. You know, the thing about I like about my list is that I can switch up, but I was trying to get the goals on the board because my thought process was the masters sort of trudge up the board slowly, and if they can get into your lines, then it is game over. So it's almost like you're playing on like a countdown timer. So I was like, goals are worth double, let's go for that. But I sort of tried to make it work for too long. So by the time I switched it up and just started hunting apprentices, you know, I got a few, you know, the game went to 12-6, but... No, game over.
Yeah. In your team, I think that's where someone like Kraken and Corkair together really pay off. Mm. Where you go, oh, Corkair, man, if I have to drag, I'll lose to influence. That's where Kraken comes in. You go, oh, I'm going to give up the damage and knock down my Kraken. You go, sprint, I'm going to drag the other model in for Corkair to come round off.
Yeah.
And I think doing that on some of the matches where you can actually start crowding them out, knocking down, getting defend down, whittling down, it's a bit hard. Like,
well, drag's not particularly low down on the playbook. He's got six dice. You take Toon away for armour straight away. Yeah. So you're looking to hit almost every, if maybe actually you're looking to hit all four.
I think Kraken just pay for the drag. Go, Kraken will take the influence hit.
Yeah.
But then Corkair is freed up to come in and actually do his shit.
Yeah.
And more importantly, it fucks with people like here. They pull the board, fucks with their order activation, go in with it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, go, oh, I'm going to have them all. I'm going to have Burnish Anvil and Kinder, Burnish and Furnish all come up to you. Well, you go, huh, not in that order, Muff. Burnish, get over here. I know you ain't got tough hide.
Yeah.
And it can send momentum to negate damage. Every time I think of one of the models, you go, if I kill this motherfucker, each one of them got like a little thing that makes them that much harder to kill.
Yeah.
Like Burnish, 1 MP, he's got a reusable got enough smash.
Yeah.
Charge, 1 MP, you don't get it. Okay, character play, 1 MP, you don't get it. Alright, shit, okay, never mind. Alright, Furnish.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got 3 armor now, and I burn you. Here comes Cast. Momentum, 3 damage on 2.
I think. If the TO had come up to me and he said, all right, Alex, we're about to draw the next round. I can take one guild out and you definitely won't play them. It would be, for me, it would be Blacksmith every single time. Every single time. I can't figure them out. I can't figure out the counter to them, which is why I was fucking thrilled to go off a 12-6 loss into the Blacksmiths again. I was just amazing. Brilliant. Good. So game 3, I had Barry from the Roll Better podcast.
Yeah.
So, like I said, you know, you could not swing a stick for hitting a bloody podcaster or a content creator. Really good game, really good clean game. One thing I liked is that we both played a really clean game. Mm. There was a lot of sort of, my intent here is for this. There was none of this sort of measuring models moving, influence being moved around, not being explained to each other. It was always, this is what I'm doing now. And it wasn't like a condescending way. It was just to make sure that we both had a really good, clean game.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed it. I'm glad he agreed with the fact that 12-4 didn't really reflect it.
I hate games like that where you go, oh, I lost 12-4, but the points I'm about to get were just on the verge of coming up.
Yeah, not even that. It was like, I heard it be called board state, which was brilliant, because someone else was talking about two other games when I was just having a pint, and a game that was going on between two other people, and they came over and he went, oh, it's 8-9, and someone went, ooh, could go either way, and he went, no, board state, thingy's got it, he's got it, you know, and that sort of board state of showing that such a close game is actually just, it's not close at all. And in the same way here, you know, 12-4, there was so many if, buts and maybes. The scoreline should have been closer. Obviously it wasn't.
Yeah.
But we had a good laugh, a really good clean game. Barry should have won he should have won so early into that. He was attacking Sakana from a standing position with Iron, you know, the walking suit of armour, who was then going to sprint and score. You know, there was a 6-point activation to be had because Sakana had 1 health, right? And he was rolling something like 11 dice. He got nothing. So I took the poised, got completely whiffed the roll. Oh, can't do anything. Oh, he's tough hide. I can't do anything. Petulantly, I went, well, I'll just take the tackle then, which popped close control, which made me look like a strategic genius when he then unloaded the rest of the influence in and Sakana just survived. He had 1 health. Sakana just didn't die, and I was like, so we just looked.
You can't take the parting blow.
No, we just sort of looked at each other and we were like, okay, I guess I'll activate Sakana. That just tackles it, fucks off with the ball. Yeah, it was amazing how we just sort of just looked at each other and we were like, oh, I don't think either of us expects him to live. Don't really know how that's happened. But but in the same way that, like, throughout that game, he couldn't hit me. Like, he was throwing the dice. No. And then I was, I received the ball, went to pass it down the line, pass, nope. Right, okay, retrieves it, pass, nope. Right, retrieves it, pass, nope. Okay, retrieves it, pass, nope, brilliant. So like the entire way working down the line, not a single one hits. But yeah, I got a goal on the board. There was more to be had, but I think one thing in particular, I'm glad he said that he hadn't noticed, was I tilted hard at one point. Hard. It was 12-4, and I thought, right, I can get into the, it wasn't 12-4, of course it wasn't. It was like, he was up, and I was on 4, and I was like, right, I can get back into this. Just need to get in and score the goal. I was like, oh yeah, Angel comes up here, yeah, she's super shot, goes to buy the shot, and I had one momentum, and I was like, you don't need the bonus time with Angel. And he just went to me, I'm going to say this before you buy the super shot, and you say you're going to use the shot. And I was like, right. And he just sort of tapped his game plan deck, and I was like, oh, and it was the one where you
closest model,
yeah, pays an extra one.
The irony is, Angel is one of the few models who can easily circumvent that.
It was just because the game was so far up the board, it was so like just he was just eating my models in my half, and I was just like, and at that point I'm glad he didn't notice, because in my head I turned into a 4-year-old. I was just like, right, brilliant. So I just checked out for about a turn and a half before I came back into the game, and by that point the damage was done. It was really good though. Really good game.
Well, that kind of affected to me when you go in that game going, oh, he was rolling abysmally, he was having full passing play, which was getting nothing, and he still beat you that badly. That's how fucking good that team is.
To be fair, he executed them perfectly. There's a lot of moving parts there. And I find it frustrating when I'm beaten by a blacksmith player who couldn't really figure them out. Like, he knows what he's doing. He had all the moving parts were in the right place. But still, I feel like you said, with the amount of attack rolls he was doing, and then he was missing, was sort of made up by the fact that he'd hit one and go, oh, momentum 7. It's the sort of thing where I just want to go, sorry, just show me that. Have you drawn that 7? No, that is a 7. Cool. Okay. And like the things where it's like...
I know you've got tough high, but that's still half your health.
Yeah. Yeah, and things like coming in on Angel, and I was like, that was when I'd throw my toys out the pram. So I put Nimble on her because I just had influence to spare.
Yeah.
So I threw Nimble up on her, and he comes in with Sledge to, it was like, oh, 6s for the tackle. Doesn't matter because I can just net hits.
I'll
just take the tackle. So he just booted the ball into space. That's when Iron went and fetched it, and then came back in on Sakana and with Ferrite to try and set up for the 6-point activation on the next one, which he should have had, in all honesty.
I remember saying to you when the Blacksmith first came out, is that they're clearly a team intended for newer players. Like, the way they're kind of designed for me is with very clear cut strategy.
Yeah.
If you bring Anvil and Sledge, it's obvious what you do with them to get the most out. And the apprentices are kind of, Master Apprentice is kind of built that way. Alloy obviously works great with Hurst. Like, he gets a bunch of benefits for being nearer. It's obvious where your position is meant to be. I remember saying to you that those kind of tools are great in the hands of a new player who's learning the game, but when you get people who actually know the game coming along and go, yeah, I've got Ferrite, and on her legendary turn Iron can get what, like an 8-inch dodge or something on his, she can got like get over here Iron, hasn't she? Where he can give him like a free dodge up to his next move. I think he gets 6-8 that, and he can go up to, and I know he can increase his movement even further, but he can get something like a 12-inch sprint. He's not a bad fucking model at all, but that thing of like going in a new player, that's really helpful in a guy who knows what he's doing. Those kind of playing, how you've had games with Dave where you've had 2 goals on the first turn.
Yeah, there was one game we played in the Potter's Guild in Stoke in March, where his first activation, Ferrite comes up, brings Iron a bit of the way with her, legendaries to do some horribleness from kicking off to me. Then scores. I was like, right, okay, kicked out. From there, Iron, I activate, Iron comes in, steals the ball, scores. So he was 8 points up, 2 activations in, not 2 turns, 2 activations in. That was like you said, that sort of calculated pre-play of, this is how I do this if it's available to me. But yeah, that was horrible. Then we went into my fourth game, so the last game on the Saturday, which was the first game I won across the tournament, 12-8 with Paul from TNG Productions. He played Scatha Hunters, which is literally the first time I've played against Scatha, Ulfa, Veteran Hearn, or Snow.
If you brought them forward, you deserve to lose. I hit all 4 of their models in that order.
he also brought J.Carr, who I know I know his playbook better than some Hunters ones do. And then, because you play him every single minute every day, and then normal minks, not vet minks. And so we basically just played a really janky game of guild ping pong. It was so fun. We both had a really, really good time, because we were just, because like one of the first things Paul said when he had the ball was, he just goes, oh, I'm just gonna I like really janky shit, so I'm just gonna try and Scott, he said. And then he got this like janky Ulfa, gets this horrendous like goal threat distance, blah blah blah, he scores a goal basically from his deployment zone, and he just went, yep, got that, I'm happy now.
Again, like, that's kind of one of the play styles I genuinely really disagree with, which is a shame, because it's super popular in Old Ball, is the jank, you know, the jank setup play. Yeah, again, plan heavy.
Mm.
It, I do that, then that happens, and I get VP. And I generally don't like them play, because A, it kind of hamstrings you being more reactive.
Mm.
You get into the mindset of, I need a chain of events to happen, and there's another player trying to put his hand between the event,
yeah,
and go, Ulfra, fuck you, I know you need to be wherever, I can just drag him over. You can see the plan more importantly.
Yeah.
There are some players that are just so strong, knowing about them doesn't help. And I generally find in a game that's usually more of a bad thing than a good thing.
Yeah.
If the Guild Ball isn't best when it's a back and forth, and if you're going up against a player and go, yeah, I do that, and there's nothing you can do to stop it, those are some of the hardest games to play.
Yeah.
Garfin's very much like that though. She's got the snowball, she's got the fast ground that she gets for free.
Yeah.
I do like Vet Hearn, but I just like original Hearn more.
Yeah.
And I really want to love Ulfra. God help me, I have tried to love Ulfra. I just think he's a flat out shit model.
Well, he scored a goal from basically nothing, so I think that's alright, because it was a 4-2
straight.
Everyone
can score a goal though, when you give him a free 4-inch dodge and fast ground, and he got Where'd They Go, which is the best character play in the game. I don't think I can even feel Where'd They Go is incredible. Like, the thing that makes me want to play Ulfra more is that because he got Where'd They Go, it makes him automatically a middle tier model. He could be almost the shittiest model in the game, but if you get Where'd They Go, you get moved up to mid tier immediately. Think of how much shit it get you out of. Like the normal striker thing of, like, I'm gonna crowd up on them, lock them down, they can't get away now, we've got two models on them. Where'd They Go, it's like, you could have four models on me. Mm. If I've got a gap I can fit my base out of, I'm
that's the thing. You can weaken acrobatic by being base to base with someone,
yeah,
but you can't stop someone if they've got 4 inches of movement.
Yeah, there's almost no counter to Where'd
The counter is surround their base so they can't go anywhere.
Yeah, but that cut up is so difficult to pull off that it's virtually impossible. Meanwhile, if you've got four models on a guy, or like three, you know, doing the triangle to prevent them leaving, that's half your team tying up one model, and they've got five other fuckers on the board wreaking havoc, and they will be. Again, that's one of the things when you messaged me in the conference tournament, in this turn, I gave Jack up, because then you're going to get points elsewhere.
Yeah.
That's another concept in Guild Ball that I think is underappreciated. The ability to foresee going, aha, he can have that model. He can have that 2 VP because I've got 6 VP over here waiting to happen and he doesn't know it.
And that's exactly something that happened in this game. This is the first moment of, you know how you said earlier that there's sort of, you need to see models as there's 4 VP, there's 4 VP, there's 2. I had it for the first time ever, like properly, in this game.
You had your actual Matrix moment where you see the code going down.
I just saw straight through it. And the thing is with, we burnt so much of the round timer off clock because me and Paul both really like the Walking Dead All Out War minigame.
It'd be great if he started talking about All Out War. He'd like looked you up and he'd like, every time he put on your clock, he went, yeah, what do you think about All Out War?
But we just spent about between turn 1 and 2 or 2 and 3, we spent probably about 15 minutes off the clock just holding game plan decks, not even looking at them, just straight up talking about All Out War. We're just like, yeah, it's really good. And we're like, oh shit, should we play some Guild Ball now?
just clear off the table, put All Out War.
I think that interaction summed up this game. It was so fun.
Yeah.
But so when he scored with Ulfra, ball went back out. Corsair had the ball, and Sakana, who I'd kicked off with and then went to try and retrieve the ball but had sort of ballsed it up, was 10 inches from the goal. Because like when he went up, he didn't have the rest of the movement. I was like, oh god, I've screwed this. So he's 10 inches away from the goal. Corsair's got the ball around the middle of the pitch. Sakana's knocked down. Scatha is knocked down, and Corsair's engaged. So I was like, right, okay. And then Paul plays the, you both get a 4-inch dodge game plan. He moves a model, I couldn't even tell you which model it is he moved, and then I moved Corsair, still engaging Scatha but 4 inches towards Sakana, because as soon as he moved the other model, the green letters started to fall and I saw my first ever 6-point activation. I just saw it.
And so he
goes, he does his turn, which he did his first activation, which I think he charged Angel just to sort of lock her out from where she was, and I was just like, okay, cool. Corsair from where he's standing morning, just because he had a full stack of it on him. He just like elbow dropped into Scatha until she died. He then jogged up his four through his legendary, so which hit Sakana, which meant he was now in range of the goal because he was a 10-inch kick. Because his 8 went up to 10 inches under the legendary. With a fat stack of momentum from... Because obviously I played with Scatha's like corpse before I actually did, yeah. Did the killing blow. Sort of pushing around in that. Then, so I passed to... So then with the legendary, with the legendary, just got a snapshot of Sakana for a 6-point activation. Ball came out. I think he scored again, at which point by then I'd already killed Ulfa. Because where he came in, Jack just pushed him off the board. I just pushed him off the back of the board. Then it was... Then at the top of the next turn, Angel was sitting with the ball in cover. Minx was engaging her, and J-Car was just ready to pounce, basically. Yeah. I was just like, all right, here we go. J-Car's going to absolutely kill him. Game over.
J-Car, for the amount I love him, teams that do good knockdown and good push, or good dodge, he still, at the end of the day, a one-inch melee model, doesn't have a knockdown. And yeah, J-Car can have some horrendous activation where he just can't keep attacking after attack.
Yeah.
And he's not got great defense. So if your model's standing up, they're gonna get the counter attack. You can't afford to their melee. You have to go back to back and hope for that. Yeah, Jake, I come count on the captivation.
Yeah. So then Paul wins initiative. We're on 8-8, and I was just like, that's it, that's game. I just thought, that's game, because when you're just sitting there and you're just waiting for him to move his toys and just take the ball off you and go and score, because Jay Carr could just do it. And then he goes, okay, Minx is going to attack. And I was just like, okay, this changes literally everything.
Yeah.
She had 2 influence on her. She whiffed both things, was already engaging me, so couldn't get her furious. And I was just like, okay, Angel attacks, takes the push dodge, sprint, super shot, shot, GG. And then afterwards I just said, I honestly thought you had that. I thought you were going to go with Jay Carr, and he said to me something along the lines of, as soon as I started with Minx, I knew I should have, but like, he'd already rolled the first dice. It's not like you can go, oh, I'm going to activate, oh no, I'll activate. He was halfway through
that. Oh yeah, that report was pretty shit. In fact, I think I fell.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I'm really hoping all of them would hit, so now I haven't. Maybe I should do something else.
Speaking of, we'll talk about navigators in a minute. But yeah, then so that was, I ended Friday 3 losses 1 win. Then I went into, sorry, that was Saturday. So Saturday I finished 3 losses, 1 win. Then I went into Sunday, completely different attitude to my first game on Saturday. I didn't have the, oh, it's a tournament, shaky hands, oh, how does this work? Is that a 6 or a 7 widget? I just went in with it, just like, I didn't even register. When I saw the round came up on Longshanks, I just went, right, what's my table? I didn't even look who I was playing into. Yeah. I was just like, what's my table? Go there, sit down, bam, there's my guys. Sort of, I had the 10 on the thing, which I think worked in my favour, because I think this guy tried to counterpick.
Yeah.
But I was just like, just one at a time, bringing my guys off, just like shoved the rest under the table. And this is probably the proudest moment I've ever had in Guild Ball, because this is the game that should go down in the record books whenever anyone says Angel's trashed here. You shouldn't play Angel, she's a trash model, you shouldn't play her. I won 12-10 Corsair into Corsair Angel in the same turn. Angel got a goal, she got a snapshot, and she got a snapshot screamer to finish the game off.
Yeah.
I love Angel, she is phenomenal. Now that could have been completely avoided. She was at the cusp of the 10 inches of super shot, one push that would have killed it. But using other models, other activations, I kept the scrum, I kept chewing things up, so that gave me that freed Angel up to do what she did. So she got the super shot on her own, obviously. Then ball came out, Corsair just rough seas, because I think it was actually on Corsair, or it was on tentacles, you know, for the close control. So I was just like, well, rough seas, mine. Then at that point Corsair blew his legendary to pass to Angel, and because Angel was in that legendary, she was on so many dice, I was bonus timing the passes to get to her, because I was just like, she's gonna get the goal. So I was just, yeah. So like, when I think the first time I didn't have the momentum to do it, so I had to take the bonus time on one or the other. So I took it on Corsair's pass, which obviously landed, and then she got the snapshot. And then the second time, the ball came back out, got the ball, got it on Kraken, and Kraken passed to Angel under Corsair's legendary, 3 dice, bonus timed it up to 4, and then she smashed it in with a screamer. It was such a close game, though. That was 12-10. It was one of them ones where, saying about that winner's mindset, that champion's mindset of, I was looking at things and I was going, there is, you know, and you do the quick sort of numbers in your head, and I was just going, there's a 60% chance this is going to work. And I was just going, well, I was just like, no. if this works, he cannot make a mistake for the rest of the game. So I was just like, that outweighs it. Or what happens if it doesn't work? Oh no, it scatters. Or oh no, it bumps into a bit of terrain. I was just like, worst case scenario, it bumps into something and he gets it. Best case scenario, I put him on such a position he cannot make a mistake. So I was like, well, there you go. I'm not going to go 60%. So I took it, got it. And then same again with Kraken, because Kraken was actually engaged by a couple of people. So his two dice kick went down to one for the engagement. His two dice kick went up to three for the legendary, went down to one for two engagements. So I bonus timed it back up to two, because it wasn't a case of, oh no, it's only two dice. It was a case of, this will win the game. This is how I win the game.
There are two alternate universes there. One go, oh, I only get two dice, I should hang on to the ball and play safe. And the other guy go, I've got two dice, and if I get that one hit, I have just ruined his day. I win.
Yeah, I just straight up win. Because once it's on Angel for the snapshot, I was rolling base of four, super shot, she went up to five. Of course, there's legendary. I was rolling six dice, looking for two fours.
Yeah.
I'll take that any day of the week. So that's how that game went.
If you had quick attack hitting a four hero model, why would you think you wouldn't get the two hit? People get into that mindset of like going, oh no, for the goal, for a snapshot goal, I need two instead of the one hit. You're like going, wait a minute, you're just hitting a four hero model with a character player that had quick attack. Why won't you champion? You're not going to get them two hit. I think when we're originally going into the theory craft of the Corsair Kraken, I call it the Corsair Kraken Jack team. Because for me, them three models make up the core of that team, and the striker. Kind of give or take.
Which is interesting, because that's how they were when you first sort of pitched them to me. That's how you were when you went, right, you're not enjoying Guild Ball, you used to enjoy Fisherman, try these six models. And you were saying, these guys can do so much. And the whole idea, because I like Angel and Sakana so much, I flip it, and I naturally want to score goals. But the fact that them three can slow the game down when I need it to be slowed down, they can get kills if I need them. Yeah, it might not be momentously, but like with but it might not be with huge stacks of momentum, but I'm still grinding the game down.
VP.
Yeah, slowing it down when I needed it to, which is great. And then my next game was another fish game, another Corsair mirror match, which I won 12-4. So in this one, this is where I did them proper sacrificial lamb plays. He mentioned afterwards that it was his first Corsair game, first game ever with Corsair, and that he was sort of trying to pick against the models that I'd taken.
Yeah.
Sort of, he formed a scrum, but it was Corsair, Gutter, Hag, and there wasn't a lot of damage potential there apart from Corsair and Gutter.
I think Gutter is a great pick into the Fisherman. But yeah. Okay, at the end of the year, what count? I think for me, relying on Gutter now, it's just getting yourself up for failure.
It's the same reason I never took Thresher when I was playing Farmers, because I was like, well, he was gonna get his teeth knocked out with the Nerf Bat, so why learn it? Which is why when Avarice and Greed got taken off me, well, at the time I was playing Farmers, looking to play back into fish, and they took Avarice and Greed away. I went, oh, fine, I won't take a union option, because you know eventually it'll get taken off me, and it turns out it's going to be taken off me sooner rather than later. But this game, I sort of baited Jack and Sakana by throwing them forward. A scrum got formed up there, which completely freed up almost three quarters of the pitch for me to do what I wanted.
Like I mean, in the original kind of game plan I had in my head with that core team, between Jack, Crack and Corfair, they lost down model. The fact they can kill model is just icing on the cake. The fact that Corsair is such a nightmare to deal with on individual level, Kraken can knock down so easy, it can drag more important, so it's not restrictive by movement. And Jack can just push people around, or generally just be a pain in the arse crowding people out, but you can do the push jank.
The great thing about Jack is that you can be playing the scrum, and you can suddenly go, oh shit, this scrum has flipped, it's not working for me anymore. You can just slam that button, you can just go, nope, and Jack just goes, get to fuck, only the ones you want to as well, which is the greatest thing about it, because you can go, you're causing me bother, you're gone, you're causing me bother, you're gone, you're causing me bother, you're gone, ooh, you're not doing too great, you can stay here, knock down sunshine. And then he sort of goes, oh, I didn't even have any influence on me, I just did that for a momentum, I'm just going to stand here and be a crowd out, tag, you're in Corsair, you know, like,
yeah, that ability to get cheeky takeout, secure a wing, or more importantly, reset situations that are favourable to you. Again, like, I think when you messaged me going, oh, I'm playing a Corsair team, so I went, oh, who have they brought? I noticed Hag and Siren run, and they messaged you going, I think they're crutch models.
And the thing is, I've never ever gotten Hag to work. She just can't work for me. She's like, yeah, getting the extra dodges and stuff is nice, but the way I'm looking at it now is, cool, dodges are nice, but you could have infinite dodges. Tell me how that's progressing you down VP.
Yeah.
You are helping other models move down their VP track, moving you down the VP track. You're accelerating other models moving down, but she is not actively pushing you down it.
Yeah.
I would drop her any day for a model that is actively going to help me put points on the board.
Well, I think people look at her character card generally, look at her player book and her character player, and the fact she gets a free character player, and she gets like, a free character player, and she gets fear.
I will say that fear caused me a lot of bother in the last game.
It can be annoying to play, isn't it? But that's the thing with character play. Well, fear isn't always that bad of a thing sometimes, if you think on it. If I played Ferryn into Hag, I just want to eat up fear to free up Jake out to destroy her. Because once fear is her main
effect,
it's a kind of double dare to go, really want to lose that one info? I do. I'll pin her. I get three dice now. And now I've got it. Now you're pinned and now you're scared and you can't move anywhere other than dodge, which won't do you any good. And now that's it, here comes Jakar, here comes Fina. Here comes Fina, by the way, furious, doesn't even have to pay for them.
Yeah.
Pay for don't count. And when you get into that mindset of like going, oh, fear will protect me. Fear is not as good at a defence as people think.
Yeah.
And if you're just willing to take the hit, she becomes a shit weak model really fucking quickly.
Yeah, that game, I went 12-4, Angel scored, and Corsair Legendary and scored, and then I unfortunately clocked him out for 4 points, whereas with my first...
How bad were the clock?
I had 18 minutes left.
Shit.
It was complete... If you took the first turn out of it, that would have been very, very different. I think I still would have won on the clock, but the first turn took a lot out of it because it was very obvious that it was like his first Corsair game, and you could tell that he was really thinking about each activation, whereas I was just going, he jogs. Really good game, really fun game, really clean game, like I said.
Battle game, baby.
Yeah. And then in my last game, I lost 12-8. This is the one I was really kicking myself about, actually. I was the other three losses, losing into Jason. I wasn't that bothered because I had a full stack on Sakana, a full stack on Corsair. Angel was in snapshot range. If I could get the ball, which wasn't impossible from where it was, if Mist hadn't been Mist, replace Mist with any other model, obviously the board state would have been different, but if on that activation you had taken Mist off, you put another model down there, I think that game could have perhaps gone my way. The two Blacksmith games, I felt just locked out, but this last game, I feel that a combination of the heat of the room, whatever, like coming off the back of two Corsair games, I couldn't tell you my name at the end of it, they were exhausting. I felt like I dominated the first part of the game, and then Matthew just grabbed it. He just took it out of my hands at the last moment because I forgot that Siren could just take the ball off me from range. That's all it was.
Yeah.
Something that I had been watching out for the entire game, I just didn't allow for. Angel had full stack on her. I had the momentum I needed. I was just going to trot up with the super shot and win the game. And he just comes up and he just goes, just going to charge into Corsair and trigger Seduce. Can take that, and obviously because he triggered it with a charge, not buying for it, he then had one to pass, got the ball right out of there, gutter. I didn't have anyone who could reach gutter, and he just put it on Corsair for the snapshot. So that's the only one that I'm frustrated about, because I know that I let myself down. The rest of them, I think that the games I won because of this new mindset I've got. The games I lost, I'm happy with, because I'm happy with how I played into them. It's just that last one, because of that one silly little mistake.
I'm kind of glad you come round to it on that, because I feel like now I've opened you up to it. I hope the people listening, it can be a bit feel good bullshit almost when you go, if you go in there with the right thinking attitude and shit, it'll make your player better and you'll get better. And people go, wait a minute, that's bullshit. You don't make the playbook any better, you don't make the character playbook any better, you don't make my roles any better. But like I say, you've got limited thinking space. And when you get put into a bad mindset, the things you think about ruin your play. And like I say, you forget things when you're on the back foot and you're tired and ground down and you're not feeling your best. Don't make your best decision. And people on the regular level stand that when you're not at your when you're super tired and hungry. How many people go into the supermarket hungry? Just fill the trolley with shit. And you get home and go, why did I buy all this? And people understand that in a day to day day to day level, that when you're not at your best, you're never gonna make your best decision. But you don't walk into a supermarket thinking, how do I win supermarket?
Yeah.
how do I win getting maybe or just drinking water of a full fat coke? You don't think about it that much. But in the Tottenham situation where you are playing 2 win playing against a guy. Like, and again, that for me, I was super glad of your performance when you were messaging me again going, right, I've got to do this guy, crushed him, got this guy, murdered him, three angel goals in one turn. I cannot be stopped. Next one, I'm going like, yeah, you're getting on it. And messaging going, like, there are people you've beaten now who, if you can get to a point where you can 12-0 anyone, yeah, or 14-0 anyone, you're at a level that may, you know, you're up there. And I think you leveled up during the tournament, literally during the tournament. You've gone from over the arc of the story of the tournament.
Yeah.
You've started with Jason where you've gone, you're literally a hero. It's the start of the film where the evil Black Knight Jason is coming going, I'm from the realm of singled out, you idiot. Fucking cunt you in half.
Yeah.
And you come back Highlander style going, oh shit, I could have beaten him if I've just found my thing.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought back around to that, actually, because I think that game, going into it as I did cold on Saturday morning, reading into everything the way I did, I think I could play that 20 times, and I think he would have won 20 of them games. If I'd drawn him, obviously that's not how it works because of where tables were and stuff, if I'd drawn him on the Sunday, either first or second game, whatever point, I think I could have pushed it down to, you know, maybe I'd be quite comfortable to give myself a 40% chance to win that. You know, it's like I said, the end of the board state wasn't impossible, and I was so inside my own head to start with. I think if I'd gone into that in either a casual setting, taking away the fact that I was obsessing before I sat down, I was obsessing with his position in like the ratings,
yeah,
and if you take away the fact that I was still worrying about that, I completely regressed to I need to not let him win. I think if I'd gone into that with the either tiger mindset that I've literally picked up over the last few weeks, then I think, yeah, like I said, I wouldn't have won every single one of them, but I think maybe out of 20 games, I'd like to think that I could have won a couple of them.
Yeah, again, it doesn't have to be 100% that, but that's the thing I find fascinating about Guild Ball, is that the winner and the loser mindset, or like, there are so many different kind of ways for thinking about the game and types of player that I'll probably get into that in more episodes later on down the line, where there's like Venn diagrams of players where they intersect and stuff.
Yeah.
But a lot of the things that make people lose or win games don't have anything to do with the actual game.
Yeah.
When we've been going through the game, you know, oh, there are a few setups that I went for, but your losing didn't come off the back of oh yeah, I forgot I had a great character player, or I didn't realise he did that. It was going, I couldn't see the VP on the board, my brain wasn't putting together the pieces it needed to put together to see the VP, right, look on the board and go, where are my points, where do I soak up, where does my win come from? And again, you factor in all the character players, but there's no part of you that goes, oh, you know what, if I kind of had one more tack, I forgot how much tack he had, or I forgot he had blah blah blah. It's never really ruled. You've not talked about how, oh, I forgot I needed two influence for the charge, or you had that one game plan deck that came back to haunt, that's a relative thing. But a lot of your losses and wins seem to came from, I thought about it that way as opposed to that way, and it pushed you either way.
But I think one thing to remember is that when that game plan deck thing did come into fact, Baz, it was a role better podcast player, guy I was playing, Barry, what happened was, when he pushed it forward, he like grinned this animalistic grin. There was actually a glint in his teeth, the sort of the colour drained from the world, and he stood up like sort of hands on hips and sort of belly laughed, and like there was fire in his eyes, pure venom. Yeah, it was.
I completely relate to that mindset. I fucking love doing that to an old player.
He literally apologised to me and mentioned it before.
I love doing that to me. I love that kind of, not, I don't like doing it in a dickish way, going, oh, if you do this, nothing can happen. Oh, what, I have a secret play, actually. I don't lie about
I've got a secret play. I lied.
Yeah. Go, oh, no, that could happen. If you don't read the back of my card, you fucking loon. Run off with the game. I hate shit like that. Like, for me, that's borderline cheating.
Yeah. One thing, the thing is, though, that card was on there, and when he played it, he said, I'm going to put that next to my goal, so we both know it's in play.
Yeah.
Oh, and I was like, yep,
yeah,
fine.
Well, perfect. He went out of his way to go. He didn't cheat you. He didn't have it face down somewhere else and go, oh, now that you're there, welcome to my world, bitch.
And he didn't. And then he spent the entire turn, like, literally running his players so I was offside, you know?
Yeah.
And then sort of like, so it was there for me to see that this was happening. And then once I was in that position, you know, like I said, he didn't let me spend the influence and then say, by the way, fuck you. He sort of tapped it and said, look, I'm going to mention it because we've been having a nice game and we're both playing a really good, clean game. You know, you're being a nice guy. By the way, you're fucked.
Yeah, if you were a prick, Alex, I'd be putting this card in my sleeve. But, Yugi! Yeah, horrible. And going into that situation of like, I can't. You had a moment ago, you had 4 VP on the board, and now you're in a different realm. Yeah, of it. Like, I can't do fucking.
The thing
hell.
Is that 4 was going to put me on the difference between 0 and 4, and between 4 and 8. It's both 4 VP, but it is huge.
Yeah.
Because going from 4 to 8 doesn't mean that, like, you need one goal. You need one goal.
Yeah.
You, that other player cannot make a mistake with that. That the ball is a resource, and that suddenly goes from being really helpful, you know, helps you score, it suddenly becomes, that is a time bomb. You have to keep it moving, because if you put it somewhere that it's retrievable, or if you leave it on someone who's activated and can be tackled, you, like, it suddenly becomes like a shit, I cannot make a mistake, I cannot afford to make a mistake with it, which is hugely helpful, because suddenly it starts draining their clock. So yeah, that's like that getting that difference, going from 4 to getting that goal to go up to 8, I think that could have completely changed the game.
Yeah.
But it was my own fault.
Yeah, not
forgot about the card.
Not all VP is body.
Yeah.
And like, okay, when you get to, when someone's 10-2 in me, I find those situations a lot harder to deal with, because I know in their head they go, I'm a takeout away now.
Yeah.
Getting into their head, going like, I know what they're thinking. Like, because I be thinking the same thing. Yeah. I'm on 10 VP and they're on low VP. I'm like going, I can now start removing decisions I potentially have to make.
Yeah.
If we're both 6-6, I have to think about, if I send this model in for the takeout, is he going to get taken out right back?
Yeah.
Is that takeout going to be better for him than it is for me on 10 VP?
Yeah.
That takeout will come going, it don't matter.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to live.
Yeah.
Because once the takeout's done, I can just start throwing people in. I can literally throw caution to the wind and go, if I get this, I win. They have to do so much just to prevent me from getting in with a goal. Instead of going, when they're 8 and they need one more goal, and I'm at 6 where I go, the goal and a takeout is a world difference.
Yeah. I use like a little A5 piece of acrylic to keep track of the score, and when I wipe out that 4 and I put the 8 down, I'm just like, right, there is a goal here, where is it? And then my entire game plan changes, like my entire attitude changes.
Yep.
And like it's that step up from going in and going, like I said, you know, you go into a game and you're going, where am I going to find the VPs? It's that step up, because you're going, where am I going to find the VPs? It's, where am I going to close this game out? Where am I going to become the fucking winner of this game?
Yep.
Yeah, that's God, I'm fired up.
I love that when you're on 9. For me, my favourite moment is when I'm on 9 VP and I've got Fina floating around going, oh, I can't, fuck it, you think I'm two takeouts from me, you idiot. Where the hell is my bear hug? I just start fishing around for it.
Yeah.
How many games have I won with 2 takeouts and 2 bear hugs?
Yeah.
Like, I remember saying that to you. In the earlier part of the tournament, you'd got into a mindset of like, I think you mentioned, you sent me a message going, alright, here's what I'm going to go for. I just need to keep my game plan in mind. Go, 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 go.
Yeah.
And I said to you, whoa, don't go. If they give you 4 takeouts from the goal, you take 4 takeouts from the goal. Don't get too plan heavy.
Yeah.
Because when you start making plans, people can ruin them.
Yeah.
And again, on my favourite kind of player is the plan heavy guy. On Street Fighter and fighting games as well, I go. Because the thing I like about the plan heavy guy is that when you ruin the plan, they fall apart.
Yeah, when you take out that bottom card, the house just crumbles.
They don't go to plan 2 or plan B. Like, they go like, oh my god, my game is ruined, and that puts them in a mindset that I can continue to take advantage of.
Tilt.
They just try and form, it's not even tilt from plan playing. Some of them don't get angry, they go like, oh, I need a new plan.
Yeah.
And the plan they had originally, the plan they make later, is never as good as the original plan. And they keep trying to set up that chain of events where you keep putting your hand in, and the later the game goes on, you hear it come to decrypt, and you can see them fall apart in real time, especially on fighting game. I love that on a game where I'm playing some super defensive, they go, I've got it all figured out, here's my play. I go, how about I do this, and it comes through, and they go, shit, I didn't think of that.
Yeah.
They flail literally on the screen, and in Guild Ball Specs, a lot more time to think about it, but you see the look on the face and go, I'm gonna go here, and I can see as well as they can, I've got the sprint, I go here, I go, I'm thinking this, how many guys I pinned?
Yeah. Well, you've done it to me.
Oh, yeah. But or not, or had Keane just flat out devour them, or go, I'll knock you down, I'll take the ball,
yeah.
Or go, if you want that ball, you're gonna have to fight for it, or blocking any number of things. But that element of, I know you're making a plan, and if you think I'm just gonna let you go through with it unattended and just seeing that thing break down. So I'm saying to you, when you go into a game, don't go, I'm gonna get two takeouts and two goals, yeah, that's my plan. Go, no, if they run their model up and you can take them all out, take them out. If the best way to get VP on the board is having Angel go, shall attack four times and do four damage.
She's done that before.
Yeah, if they give you the damage, if they give you the takeout, take the takeout. And if they give you the goal, god damn it, take them too. But but fucking, I really liked it when you were making Jimmy Jury Invention. I can see in real time your mindset changing from that of, I'm just playing against people who are destined to win against me, to I am the winner. And if they want to win this game, they're going to have to drag me kicking and screaming through there. And yeah, giving people really, that's the real fun of the game. I don't want a guy I can just crush every time. It's my best game to where I'm like, fuck, how do I, and again, if I win, more satisfying. If I lose, I don't feel as bad about it when he's a great player. But if a great player and I walk away going, yeah, that guy, he was much better than me, that I lose to people who are better than me, no problem. When people I think are good pull some bullshit out of the hat and I go, wait a minute, I couldn't even do it then.
Yeah.
Or fuck, where do I come into this?
That's the one thing, because that lack of reaction is something I hate. It's that sort of set play, okay, I'm doing this and this happens and you can't do anything about it. I did it with Jack onto Ulfa for the takeout when I played the Scatha Hunters, and like, there's no two ways about it, I felt like a massive dick, but I was just like, I'm sorry, but this is what I need to do to get some more VPs than you've got. So like, I just went, Jack gets ramming speed, he like does a little loop with this jog, so he touches the part of the base he needs to, that pushes you 2 inches, you don't get to react to that, I'm sorry, I'm now going to use my heroic, you don't get to react to that, I'm sorry, you're now off the pitch, thank you very much for the 2 VP. At no point there can you do anything unless you have unpredictable movement.
But a lot of the, like, okay, I remember messaging you about it, the difference between like a Jack reaction and another is that I know what Jack can do, and the way I counteract to that is just there's a box around the pitch and I just stay inside that box. Like, okay, if I'm inside that magic area where you can't, like, Jack can get 7 inch push, no problem, but if I'm not within 7 inch, no amount of shit in the world is going to change that. My reaction to Jack is to just not be in that area. If I give you that and you take advantage of it, that's me being an idiot. And there are plenty of times I've done that on the board and gone, I should have known better. I never went, oh, Jack's bullshit. It's when I'm trying my best to counter maneuver, I'm going like, I can think my way out of Jack. You know what I mean? I can look at the board and go, Jack's there, I just do that and that ends that. That's my counterplay, that's the reaction. If I'm in a position where Jack can just push someone off, I don't go, oh, that's bullshit, I didn't even get to react. I turn around and go, I let him have that, I know he can do it. Why am I here? The difference between some other character play, or like, okay, free armor when I've got a 4-tack model, that's not, what's my plan? Like, again, we talked about it last game with Corsair and Ox, the knockdown 2-1 shimmy and all that. It's like going, there's no amount of clever thinking on my behalf that makes that not a terrible situation. And I give you that Jack push takeout, that's on me, not on your model. I'm like, I don't know how I make that viable. They just get to do what they want, and the best I can do to counter. Okay, there are some characters who are so good in the game or have Jank so fucking powerful. Okay, Ferrite and Iron, classic. The amount of move Iron can get in a turn with Ferrite backing him up is ridiculous, and your best defence against a man playing is bad luck.
There was times when I was in them Blacksmith games where I was sort of locked out of options, and sort of he was picking up dice and rolling them, and they're the only times I was looking going, oh, go on, whiff it, go on. Like, you know, whereas like the rest of the games, you're sort of looking at the dice and you're going, dice are dice. Whereas them games, I was actively going, please, fuck this.
Yeah, I hate that. That's the thing that really gets me. Is the element of what I need to happen here is for you to have my defence against this strategy, if you having really terrible dice. And other than like from like ridiculous kettle, where I move all my models back or like form a ring around the goal, which I'm not going to do. I hate that feeling. Again, Anvil is a classic model for it. You get free armour, you've got tough hide. And then from models, even absolute killer models have a hard time than thinking about bringing them down. You've got a great counter attack, and even with anatomical, he can absolutely nightmare. That feeling of, I need great dice and I need you to have bad luck. When you're relying on the luck to balance the game, opposed to, I'm going to make a great character play, I'm going to keep my Ulfra model inch in the pitch instead of an inch. Like, I don't... If I walk up to grayscale with a one-inch model and you go, I get unpredictable movement, I'm out of here, I don't turn around and go, wait a minute, I didn't even get a reaction here. My reaction is playing into the model and thinking about what you can do. With a model where you play into them and no amount of strategizing. Again, I could look at a player card and go, here, I counter this in effect.
Yeah.
There are some cards I've looked at, like when Fresher first came out, I remember looking at that card and going, there are some models who can do nothing against this guy and he's just going to claw through them. There'll be no reaction, no counter-attack, no clever play. You're just going to get eaten by this dude. I hate that. I think it's one of the aspects of the game that I think should be looked at really carefully. Models who negate plans and are just going, yeah, well, if you roll really good, if I think that's the thing, you go, oh, that model goes down ink if you roll really good. Or, yeah, if you roll terribly, I don't go your way. Like going, if I'm relying on bad luck or good luck to make my play for me, I think you've got a real problem. Like, okay, Jack, I don't put Jack in that category. You don't roll against Jack, but you can plan against it.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Your defence is to not put yourself in that position.
Yeah, if I'm 8-inch in, or if I'm 9-inch in, I think Jack can get 8-inch top. Maybe 9 if he gets absolutely stellar.
I think it's, because what is it? It's the 4 inches for the heroic, obviously.
Yeah.
Then there's the 2 for ramming speed.
Yeah.
And then on the ramming speed, if you're able to finish it with coming back into base contact with them, you could then do a couple of attacks, but you can only have 4.
Look, you'd have to always keep it 2-inch. I think the best you could absolutely hope for with Jack is ramming speed, charge, hopefully wrap, and get a 3-inch push off that. But you need to keep him in 3-inch. So.
Yeah, so I think you're looking at 9. Yeah, 9 is 4 on world, but...
I don't think you have 9. Like, you get the 2, they need to be in melee, and you need to keep them in 3.
Yeah.
So I think 7 top, because if you push them too far, they're not in range for the heroic.
No, because if you you've got 4 for the ramp, you've got 4 for the heroic, so they need to be within 3 of you at that point, 2 of which you get from ramming speed. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe it is.
If they can't, if you ramming speed, you put them to the extent of your 2-inch, and you need them to be at 3-inch. Just for the heroic, but at the very best you get 8-inch. But if I'm a millimetre of in 8-inch, again, there's nothing Jack can do that makes him 9-inch push.
Yeah,
it's like it's not. It doesn't extend forever. Once you're in that area, once you're in that gap, that play has been effectively countered.
Yeah,
and I still think it's worth taking the push and trying to get them to the very edge. But
set it up for next turn, sort of thing. Yeah,
you prevented the VP loss. And there are some characters like, hey, that can't do shit. Fuck, how do I crack this guy? Like, okay, in that situation with Angel and Anvil, Anvil, you just need to walk up to Angel. For Angel to get out of that, you're like, I can't even attack. I can't even get one dice to try and dodge. But you've got a 2-inch melee anyway, so what the fuck? And you got, that's the thing, you were literally put in a situation where you go, I put Nimble up and I hope, I'm hoping for bad luck.
Yeah.
Because there's literally no way out. Like, that situation, it's not something to think your way out of.
Hope your way out of it.
Yeah, you're left in that dead zone.
But yeah, I think that over the course of the last couple of weeks, and then even through the course of that tournament, I've completely changed how I play. And I'm really pleased with it, in all honesty. I'm really pleased with how I'm doing. We've got a couple of events coming up, and then we've got Nationals, the GB Nationals, I think it's July. So yeah. Obviously we're both going
to
win that.
I'm looking forward to me and you duking it out Highlander style to see who takes first place.
Well, we'll be on the top table, and I'll crush you because you're a nerd. but yeah, so... Oh, yeah, we got some bloody custom dice made. Which I came home and Ali was like, oh yeah, there's a parcel here for you. I opened it, I was like, amazing, custom dice, brilliant, just arrived.
We've made it.
Yeah.
Oh god. Well, I think
This time people didn't really, you know, people didn't really know who I was, but you know, next time when we've got the matching t-shirts, the matching sunglasses, and the matching fingerless gloves, then
we need the eagle wing to Jesus Craig. What the fuck are we doing?
Fuck it. Yeah, one other thing we haven't fucking talked about. What do you reckon the Navigators?
The only thing, the little I know about them, first of all, the Navigator is quite vague with the nav. I had a feeling they will have a lot to do with redirecting movement, like the Navigator movement.
Yeah, and so one of the things at Keynote is that they're going to get a lot of dodges both in and out of activation. It's that out of activation dodge I'm really interested in.
Yeah, I get the feeling when they're defining teams, they're looking at what a lot of teams don't have, looking at common problems of a team, going, have a fresh new take on that. Not being able, out of activation dodge is something a lot of teams, I'm kind of unpredictable. unpredictable movement, I don't think there are any... Unpredictable movement and counterattack are the only means you can get dodge outside of your turn.
Or receiving the ball and dodging.
Dodging back.
But then it kills the ball, unless you've got access while I'm open.
Yeah. It's not that ability to move on your activation. And again, unless their activation is literally 1-inch dodgy, being able... Unpredictable move on 1-inch melee character, if you're not already near them, end that activation. Like, if they have a team rammed with unpredictable move, I think that'd be a scary problem.
I'm hoping there'll be
something like decoy, or maybe similar to Pin Vikings Legendary, where they put tokens on each other and they can remove tokens to do a dodge, maybe.
Maybe.
Or
I reckon it might be something like you know, Hag, how she's got that fisherman's reel.
Mm.
It might be something like that. How, like you said, how with the tokens thing, maybe like they can dodge each other instead of it being a reactionary thing. You sort of pay to dodge your friends around.
Yeah.
But that thing of that guy coming on from either deployment zone, I think that's gonna be such a trap. You're setting up a great snapshot turret, but at what cost? Because you are going to just get unless the scrum is or it's comfortably in your half of the pitch, they're just going to get eaten, isn't he?
On the bright side, more options. There could be open to, like, in most case scenario, going for their deployment zone, I imagine, will be a bit of a trick. However, it depends on the kind of model.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a thing where they've got the enemy putting their deployment model on. You go, well, shit, if he's going to go there, I'll go right here, I'll follow him. And he could be a bit of a damage dealer, could be just annoying to be around, could be a knockdown machine, or just be there to fuck with the model for like a punch. The main thing that's putting me on guard with the navigator is the ability to, they have the ability to re-roll failed dice on attack or kick. An incredible buff.
Yeah, they've got to have, like, if they don't have like 2-6 kicks across the board, like you couldn't have like the standard 4-8 superstar striker thing, because then that means you have 8 dice looking for one success.
Angel is going to be one of their models. I know she's not getting the trait.
Yeah, how would that work? Because she won't get it, will she?
If they're really to re-roll a guild,
it's called a guild rule. Like Perkins was talking through it, and he was saying, like, oh, you know, these guild sort of identities, like sort of the guild rules being like harvest markers, master and apprentice, that sort of thing. And then this whole new guild rule thing, and I'm wondering if that is going to be one of the balances that comes in season 4. Maybe, like, for example, maybe the brewers get shoved the boot in across. Maybe they all get shoved the boot in.
Yeah, get a guild rule.
Maybe the butchers all get. I don't know, but you know.
Yeah,
maybe they're all going to get a guild rule as part of that balancing process.
I generally hope I think the old guilds have been left a bit out to dry at the minute. I'm hoping things can fall healthy, older guilds catch up.
Yeah.
But yeah, for the navigator, I think hopefully that reroll shit will apply to Angel. Could make her incredible.
Yeah, surely not. I mean, like,
with her ability to reroll shit, if she had the ability to reroll again, Angel is a good model when it comes to striking your defense. Bad luck.
Yeah.
And occasionally pay off, but for the most part, you don't have a chance in hell.
Because could you imagine that the 4 dice goes up to 5 for the super shot, goes up to 6 for the bonus time.
Yeah.
That gives you 12 dice looking for one success.
Yeah, you'd be re-rolling your failed dice just to see if you got a screamer.
Yeah.
And that thing of these guys better have really middling lead, because the bad luck and good luck comes into a general. But the ability to go, I'd agree with it if you had to re-roll all your dice.
Yeah.
I think that wouldn't be that good. If you had a terrible roll and that didn't have great playbook, go, alright, I'm giving it to do the do-over, fair enough. But the fact they can go, I've got a free hit, I'll keep them, and I'll re-roll these,
it takes away the way that sort of, here's what you could have won, you know, like.
Yeah, how many times have you rolled on a model and gone, I really like it. How good would your day be? And again, add that mental fatigue factor.
Mm.
How many times could you be making an activation where you go, alright, let me have a think on this. I really need that many hits. How worth it is it going after? How much better would you feel about the activation going, I'll just re-roll my third dice. My odds just go through the roof now. Yeah. I'm almost guaranteed.
Well, if you're attacking a 3-3 defence model, your hits go from 50% to 75%.
Yeah, okay. I try not to get too caught up in the odds, because dice are inherently
but I mean, if you to look at it like, so take the step back away from it's a game, but if just to look at it as pure maths, that's a huge
boost.
So like, they've got to have like low tack needling playbooks, pretty crap kicks, otherwise I have no idea how they're going to balance them. No idea.
Well, imagine me running, doing a charge routine, going, oh shit, I missed loads of them. I missed every single die. I've done that on Cena before. before, gone for a charge and missed every single one. Imagine if I could have turned around and gone, I'll try again.
Yeah, it's huge.
Like, even if their playbook's not that great, it makes stuff like charging way more potent, because the general point of the charge is that, you know, you go for it, they get defensive and all that shit, and you know you could have a bad time. One of the reasons not to charge 9 times out of 10 is to negate defensive.
Yeah.
How much less of a problem does defense can become when you get to try again? If you charge and you roll really poorly, if you miss every single dice, you're shit. You get to try again. You basically get two charges.
So what's think of it? What vet rage goes to something like 13 dice on a charge? Is that right?
He got 7 tack. I think he goes up to 11 on the charge.
Right. So 11 on a charge.
Provided no other factor coming.
Yeah. So that's a maximum of 11 successes, but he gets 22 chances to get 11 successes.
Yeah. Again, it's the ability to turn bad luck into good luck. And again, if they've got a beaten model, they've got an actual brawler on there.
Mm.
Again,
the 40mm, 2-inch melee bloke.
You need.
Which it looks like they've got.
If he's even a middling brawler, Kraken team go. Imagine how much better is Kraken if you can reroll your deck.
Mm.
If you even have 4 inf, rerolling a day going, I want that. Yeah. When you bring in shit like Grudge Match, stuff that gives you rap, how much better do that damage potential become when you go, I can help that buffer against bad luck that every team has. The only good thing about having bad and good luck in a ball, you can go, well, I had bad luck, but this guy across from the table, he could have equally bad time. You feel a bit evened out in that area. But if the team across from you go, I've got this big buffer that helps negate bad luck. Again, how many times I've rolled a big ass charge on how much I wish I could have just picked up the entire dice and re-rolled again.
Yep.
Okay, if you miss every single dice, it's unlikely that you effectively get a free charge to try again. And it'll make them brawl the time. It'll make that a fly back, whatever the hell it's called. The one influence charge, powerful, right? Again, that buffer again, get wrapped, get the best, get all that momentum building up. I think I'm looking forward to seeing the card, but yeah, I am with that, the buff, that power. I really hope the guy can be forged and had a long, hard think on how the guy can actually play on the board.
It'll have been play tested to shit, wouldn't it?
Hopefully. But yeah, I am fully expecting to pick up the navigating card and go, fuck.
Well, do you remember when we first started seeing Falconer's cards and we were all going, and then after the first sort of initial, oh my god, there was that thing of, oh actually, no, yeah, they're made of glass. Like, it's going to be something similar.
Oh, yeah. I'm always very wary of the potential of power creep.
Mm.
Power creep in a game, the amount of damage it does is kind of immeasurable until after you've fixed it.
Yeah.
And believe it or not, it don't take long to fucking ruin a game. And I know the kind of people who play a game. Like, there are people who will love winning every time with another amount of team. There are people who just like that play. Go, I don't care if they can balance the shit. I'm gonna run through you every time.
Well, the thing is, though, it's also like, think about it. We're gamers. It's in our natures to game. If we we'll game it.
Yeah, min-maxing and everything. Like, I'm not going to begrudge people trying to win. But the amount of damage that can do across.
Mm.
A game when left unchecked, yeah, you have to. Steam Forge are really good for doing that, though. If something's running riot, yeah, coming quick.
I think that's one thing I do like, the fact that they don't just go, well, no, we've made our bed, we'll lie in it. They are happy to just go, okay, farmer's errata, what are you affecting? We're changing 3 things, and it's these farmer cards.
A good job too.
Yeah.
But I can tell you're really tired from the episode and you've had the long weekend.
Yeah.
And you've been fucking playing your ball out. But that, I like that shift of going to Tom and going, like I said to you before, that when you got into the mindset of, I only want to get one win on the board, that'll do me.
Yeah.
It guaranteed that you could only get to a certain point.
Yeah.
And just the change of, I'm going to, even in this tournament, you going, I knew going in my first few games, the reason I had a bad time opening, even that I was playing my team sick, or I didn't know the card. So I changed my, changed the way I thought about it. I had a bad mindset going into the game. I changed it. I started mowing through. Although, to be fair, I don't know how good of a mindset you can get again for Blacksmith. It was raining fucking team.
I remember once, we were at the club and it was Dave, actually. He brought him up and he goes, do you want a game of Guild Ball? And you went, yeah, yeah, yeah. And he got the Blacksmiths out and the light left your eyes.
I was playing Brewer. I brought my Brewer for me. Looking forward to a game. And I think the Blacksmiths by far are the worst. In all the matchups in Guild Ball right now, I think the Brewer versus Blacksmith is one of the worst. I think it's like a 10-2, like an 8-2 matchup in Blacksmith's favour, because the armour negates so much of what the Brewer do.
The Brewer's character is, it's called that, isn't it? Everyone calls it the Brewer's playbook.
The Brewer's playbook, yeah. The short tack, but with a short playbook. Problem is, the armour, not the, he first thought, he thought, oh, the armour just negates the wrath.
Mm.
You can still get the problem with the armour if it helps negate playable.
Yeah.
The wrapping's not even going to happen. That's like, it turned, like, okay, good armour, like 3 and 2 armour. Okay, 2 armour turns a great roll into an okay roll. Turns an okay roll into a middling roll. Turns a middling roll into a shit roll. And lastly, it turns a shit roll into you don't even get a hit.
Yeah.
How many times have I rolled in, like, Blacksmith games with Brewers and gone, I've got hit, but they don't count.
Yeah.
And I'd go, if you didn't have that armour, that'd be the mental knockdown. I could actually start getting my pants together. Yeah. How many times that armour just went, you don't even get to start your turn. Yeah. And then they turn around and go, yeah, you're on fire.
Yeah.
Momentum free. And having that thing of like going,
oh no, with my rolls, but don't worry because I can add net hits.
Yeah, net hits, yeah, blah, blah, blah. And walking away from the matchup going, I don't know how the Brewers get out of this.
Yeah.
Horrible matchup. Fucking I just genuinely do not like playing against them because of that combination of jank and armour and their ability to, like, can't think of why I'm worried about the navigator. Blacksmith armour gives them the ability to negate good and bad luck.
Yeah, so the reroll that just kills good and bad, well, kills bad luck. Yeah,
yeah.
That's what I'm saying, it turns 50% and 75%.
What more can you ask? But yeah, wary. Yeah. I'm looking forward to next episode, because now that you're fresh off Vengeance, I'm looking forward to playing again, and I'm going, this will be our first game going from kind of downtrodden Alex to you've had your training montage at Vengeance,
yeah,
and now you're coming back to the village, and the older master, the elder of the village, going, oh yeah, Link and Quatern, okay, like, see what you've learned, and I'm looking forward to just crushing it, because when we start beating each other, that's when we both start levelling up more and more and building on each other's ability. So I think your transformation from this, like, bad mindset to good mindset will make me a better player through you pushing harder on. And I'm looking forward to the next episode. Looking forward to the next battle report, anyway.
Yeah, it'll be good. But until then, go play some cool ball.
Yeah,
go.
If you can see Alex right now, just like, I'm absolutely so fucked.
Yeah. Then 3-game to Corset. I think I fell asleep in the car 3 times on the way back. I wasn't driving.
Oh,
I was caught. Yeah, that 3 games into Corsair, like Corsair into Corsair. I think, like, the TO, even when I reported the third one, he went, ooh, Corsair. What's it he said? He said the grindiest game of the century. And I was like thinking, you know what, yeah, I've just had 3 of them. But, yeah. So, right, until then, next time, subscribe.
Yeah, what are all the, subscribe.
What is it, yeah?
Tick the bell, blah, blah, blah.
Like this video, yeah, favourite,
like
it.
Like, comment, do all that shit. Five stars.
Subscribe. 5 stars.
God, have we really become a shill and bad already?
Well, I was trying my hardest at Vengeance, but every time I was just going, I can't bring
it's
myself
hard,
to do it.
It's hard, isn't it, to turn around myself to do it. Yeah, tell them how much you love them.
Well, no, it's quite literally going, hello mate, do you know who I am?
Yeah, you show up in your backpack and go, would you like some things I've touched? We should both take, like, really high HD, like, headshots. freak people out. Maybe just, like, we could do a bunch where it's, like, you know, like a
back to back, like, shade.
You know when David Brent in The Office has that, like, album cover, open shirt.
Like, yeah, open shirt, lying on, like, a white tiger skin. Oh my god. Well, when we do our first tournament, you know what's in the goodie bag.
Yeah, you can look forward to our first album.
And until then, keep doing an outro.
Yeah, outro. Thank you everyone for listening. We'll catch you next time.
Peace. Don't press that button. Keyboard's not plugged in.